is Chandra from Partner Enterprise Architect team of Microsoft. Thank you for taking the time to join the SAP on Azure webcast. Starting from today, we will be delivering a series of webcasts that covers both the Azure fundamentals as well as the sales scenarios of SAP on Azure, as well as the technical architectural considerations when you build solutions for SAP on Azure. Today's session is for 1 hour duration, and it will primarily be in a lecture mode where the presenters will be talking about the various aspects of SAP on Azure, primarily from an Azure perspective. We will have 15 minutes for Q&A at the end, and you are requested to post your questions to the Q&A tab, and we will respond to all of them. We would also request you to share your feedback at the end so that we could learn from them and improve it for future sessions as well. You will see the links delivered to you through an email. Without further ado, I would now request Louis Scott from our SAP Alliance to set the context and kick off the webcast for today. Louis, you have the floor.
Hello, everyone. I'm Louis Scott de Martinville. I'm the director for the Worldwide SAP Alliance at Microsoft. As you know, recently we announced a new technology partnership with SAP in May 2014. As a key pillar of this announcement, we also announced the certification of Azure as a certified platform to support SAP workloads. And this is a key component of our technology partnership moving forward. So as of May 2014, customers can run SAP in Azure in hybrid cloud scenarios or public cloud scenarios, and we already have customers doing it. We had many requests from our customers and partners who wanted to know more about SAP on Azure, and that's the reason why we have organized this series of six webcasts. And today's webcast will cover Azure fundamentals. So with that, I will hand it over to Norman. Norman?
Webcast. So as we discussed, we will start off with the first session in the series, which is Introduction to Microsoft Azure. The agenda for this session is to primarily cover the basics of Microsoft Azure, those components which will be relevant for the subsequent sessions on pure deep dive on the SAP part. So let me just start off. By the way, my name is Norman Sequeira. I'm an architect with the Partner Enterprise Architect team, and I will be conducting today's session. I presume you would have got this mailer already with a list of all the sessions. So this is the first one that we're doing today, which is Azure Fundamentals. We will have follow-up sessions on NetWeaver, NetWeaver deployment, overall SAP deployment scenarios over the course of the next couple of weeks. So please plan it on them. So these are the components that we'll cover during the course of the next 45 minutes, leaving the last 10 to 15 minutes for Q&A. Let's start off with an introduction to Microsoft Azure. So cloud computing is a paradigm that most enterprises have been adopting over the last few years, and this is an area as to where we'll see maximum growth over the next few years. So what is the cloud? It's an approach to computing, which is about having the right resources at the right time, connecting a multitude of devices and endpoints. So the four tenets of the basic principles of cloud computing revolve around elasticity. Customers should have the flexibility of actually scaling up or scaling down the virtual machines that they or the infrastructure that they've deployed on the cloud. Self-service is crucial. So the whole idea is that customers should be able to provision computing infrastructure for themselves without actually undergoing a lengthy process, hardware procurement process. The customer should actually pay for what they use. so that they get billed exactly for the services that they're actually using and the amount of time that they're using it for. Standards-based, since the cloud needs to cater to a multitude of customers, it's crucial that cloud vendors stick to certain standards, which will actually help customers in deploying their workloads. So Microsoft Azure is a comprehensive set of services which helps customers quickly build, deploy, and manage applications across a network of Microsoft managed data centers. So the data centers that we have about 17 data centers right now. Most of them are Microsoft managed, with a couple of them in China, which are partner managed. We will actually see the details of these over the course of the next few slides. So this is a slide which actually talks about the various offerings of a cloud computing platform. So on the left-hand side, we have a scenario which is an on-premises scenario, in which case customers own the entire stack, right from storage, networking, servers, to the operating system, middleware, application, databases deployed on this. The entire stack is actually managed by the customers. On the right-hand side, we do have the various segments in which normal cloud computing gets distributed into. So Microsoft Azure started off primarily on the platform, in the offering the platform as a service model, the PaaS model, in which case Microsoft will provide the entire underlying stack in terms of networking, storage, operating system, as well as the runtime infrastructure for actually executing the web applications, as well as batch applications. So the entire underlying infrastructure was provided by Microsoft, and customers just had to focus on writing ASP.NET or PHP or Java applications and deploying their data in a managed database like Windows Azure SQL Database. So we started off with platform as a service, and then sometime last year in April, we released the infrastructure as a service model, in which case customers can look at having more control in terms of how they deploy their applications. In the IaaS model, Microsoft Azure will provide the underlying infrastructure for from a storage standpoint, networking, servers, as well as the virtualization or the hypervisor infrastructure. So the underlying host operating system is provided by Microsoft. Everything above that has to be managed and maintained by the customer. So this is right down from the guest operating system, as well as, let's say, any application software that goes on top of it, and the eventual application that gets exposed to users within the enterprise. All of this is managed or has to be managed by the customer itself. Microsoft will make it, Azure will make it easier for you to deploy virtual machines by offering galleries, or let's say by offering various images within the gallery. But ultimately, it's the responsibility of the customer to actually update and patch the operating system onwards. We also have the software as a service model, in which gives the entire software stack right from the hardware infrastructure to the software application itself, which is managed by Microsoft. So this an example of this would be our Office 365 offering, where customers can actually get Exchange Online, Link Online, SharePoint Online services, and all that the customers need to do is to just basically create accounts and start collaborating or communicating right away. So this, in a nutshell, explains the cloud computing models. So in terms of, let's say, terms that we can associate with each of these models, the software as a service is primarily in a consume mode. The platform as a service is primarily in a build mode, and the IaaS model is in a host mode. Throughout the course of this session, we would be focusing on the infrastructure as a service model because that's the one that's most relevant to the SAP on Azure workload. So we will be focusing on the virtual machines piece for the rest of the session. This is the current map of all the data centers across the globe. So we have about 17 data centers The ones highlighted in yellow right now are the ones that are going to come up in Australia. They are currently in preview right now and should be operational, fully operational for public in the course of the next couple of months. So we have about 17 data centers, with about six in the U.S., a couple in Europe, a couple in Singapore and Hong Kong, in Japan. The ones and one in Brazil. The ones in China are the partner managed infrastructure, but they did do offer Microsoft Azure services. So overall, Microsoft Azure is actually available in about 89 markets worldwide. And the entire compute and storage capacity, we end up doubling this almost every 6 months. So just wanted to get a quick slide in terms of the cloud momentum. So although the Azure IaaS service is not too old, we've still progressed by leaps and bounds over the course of the last couple of years. Microsoft Azure is currently ranked in the leader quadrant of Gartner's Magic Quadrant. So we are ranked with AWS in the leader quadrant. The Azure data centers, though we started off with the U.S. and Europe primarily, we now expanded Australia, Japan, and China. Azure is used by over 54% of the Fortune 500 companies, and this percentage is actually increasing. We've invested a lot in actually tying up with partners to offer the solutions on Azure. And as a result of that, we have Oracle certified on Azure, as well as we have SAP on Azure, which we'll be focusing on the course of the next couple of weeks. The following two extracts quotes out here are from Gartner's report on the Magic Quadrant, where the strength of Microsoft is in primarily extending the on-premises infrastructure that customers should be having to the cloud and having one common set of services to manage infrastructure across on-premises as well as cloud. So this is a slide that tries to encapsulate, let's say, some of the most common services used on Azure. The number of services being added to Azure actually increases every couple of months. So we do have a release cadence of about 2 to 3 months. And every couple of months, we do see new services being added to Microsoft Azure. Although we will be focusing on, let's say, virtual machines and storage for most of our sessions, the beauty of it is the rest of the services on Azure can actually be leveraged by customers to integrate and create an enterprise offering. So let's say customers can actually start off with one of the services and just look at actually getting a IaaS sort of deployment with virtual machines and storage, but eventually they can look at leveraging other capabilities on Azure like Active Directory, multi-factor authentication, scheduler, Azure automation, BizTalk services, media services. So you can look at actually stitching together all of these into a composite application. So let's focus on the first component right now, which is Azure Storage. So overall, based on research reports, the SAN storage cost eventually works out to be almost 4 times of cloud storage. And this is one of the main reasons to why customers are keen on offloading storage-intensive applications onto the cloud. Azure already has about 10 trillion objects being stored on leveraging the storage capabilities. As based on some third-party reports that were done, we actually ranked better than Amazon S3 in terms of performance. Yeah. So what is Microsoft Azure Storage? Microsoft Azure Storage provides a highly durable and a scalable storage platform. Azure will provide automatic capability of managing multiple copies of your data. So basically, every bit of data that you copy onto Microsoft Azure is replicated thrice within the same data center. So this ensures that even if there's a disk failure, your data can be retrieved from the other two hard drives. This also helps us offer an SLA on the storage platform itself. We offer 99.9% SLA on the actual underlying storage itself. The storage platform actually offers higher level of abstractions, for example, drives, which is what we'll discuss in detail, and which will actually get used for the Azure virtual machines. So from an API perspective, Azure Storage is exposed via a REST API. So it's very easy to leverage Azure Storage as a service directly. So in some cases, customers have actually leveraged only Azure Storage, and they can actually have build an application around it. So you can have an on-premises application talking to the storage infrastructure, which is deployed on Microsoft Azure. The key thing from a storage perspective out here, again, is even from, so say it does satisfy all the tenets of the cloud that he spoke about. From an elasticity perspective, from a payment perspective, it follows a pay-what-you-use model. So we will discuss, let's say, some of the key components of the storage service, which is tables, blobs, queues, and drives. So from a programming perspective, Azure Storage supports .NET, Java, PHP, Node.js. Azure Storage is also the underlying infrastructure for our CDN services. In terms of storage redundancy, there are two basic modes that, although we do have multiple modes right now, the two key things that customers need to be aware of out here is, one is locally redundant storage. So in this case, data actually gets copied thrice within the same data center. This is the default setting. In case customers want a higher level of redundancy, then we can actually look at turning on geo-replication, whereby the data now gets replicated to a data center which is about 400 miles away, and again gets replicated thrice in that data center. So in case there is any failure in the entire storage infrastructure in a data center, all your read requests for that storage are automatically routed to the secondary data center. Right, so we just discussed, we discussed all of these features too. The key thing out here, as I said, is the 19.9% monthly SLA being offered by against Azure Storage. So this is an example of the geo-replication scenario. This is the U.S. East and the U.S. West data center, which are set up in pairs. So any data that you copy onto a storage in the East data center, if you have turned your application on, that data automatically gets replicated to the West data center. Now, the reason we've been talking about storage all along is because we end up using Azure Storage as the underlying mechanism for VHDs or virtual hard drives, which are actually used by the virtual machines. So before we go to the compute part, it's crucial for us to understand how is it that the storage tier actually offers support for VHDs. So an Azure disk is a format, it is a kind of blob storage. It's a page blob which gets stored in the blob storage service. And this particular Azure Storage, this page blob is offered as a disk to an operating system virtual machine. So if you look at the diagram on the left hand side out here, so we have the hypervisor platform, and on top of that we do have the guest OS, which has NICs. This in turn will connect to each page block, which is offered as a disk to that operating system. So the way it actually ends up appearing within the, let's say, file manager or the disk manager within your operating system is you would have, let's say, a C drive, which is persistent. You have a temporary drive, and then you have numerous data disks that you can map to the virtual machine. So we can map up to 16 disks of 1 terabyte each to Azure Virtual Machine. The number of disks that can be mapped to a virtual machine depends on the kind of or the size of the VM selected. We will have a look at that in detail. Right. Now this is a service that we need to understand, which can be leveraged for deploying your workloads to Azure. Now, Azure supports the option of actually taking a VHD file. So if the customer has already implemented a hypervisor-based a virtualization infrastructure within on-premises, then the customer is bound to have their environments in .vhd files. The best part is these VHD files itself can be ported and sent to Azure without any need for any conversion. Now, if these VHD files end up being in multiples of GBs and terabytes, then, and if you need to get started off quickly, then instead of using your internet bandwidth infrastructure for uploading the files from your on-premises to the Azure data center, one of the services that can be leveraged out here is Azure Import Export Service. What you can do is you can actually copy your data onto disks, and you can BitLocker those disks and send those disks across in a secure manner. You can FedEx it to an Azure data center, where those disks will the data from the disks will be extracted and copied to the storage accounts. So this is a crucial service which can be used by customers for onboarding their on-premises data as well as VHD files onto Azure. So we've just covered the storage part. Now let's move on to the next component, which is virtual machines. So when it comes to virtual machines, on Microsoft Azure, we have a gallery. So Microsoft has created quite a few images, let's say with Windows Server 2012, SQL Server, BizTalk Server, to help customers get started and build applications or build their infrastructure right away. So customers have the option of selecting a virtual machine from this image gallery and starting off. Or alternatively, if the customer has already created the VHD infrastructure within on-premises, they can upload the same VHD file to Azure as is and spawn off a virtual machine based on that VHD file. So there are a couple of ways in which you can actually do this. There are multiple VM sizes being offered out here. So you have from A1 to A9, all with different compute and RAM combination. The billing in case of Microsoft Azure is per minute. So although on the pricing website, we do display per hour rates, and that's obviously for easier computation, but from our eventual billing to the customer, the billing is done on a per minute, which means if you shut down the VM at, let's say, 39 minutes past the hour, you'll only be billed for 39 minutes of usage and not for the entire 60 minutes. You're also billed only for running VMs. Now, this one is crucial to understand. So especially if you're looking at migrating maybe a dev test SAP workload to Azure, and if the customer does not want the deployment to be active, let's say during non-working hours, then you can actually look at getting some automation script in place which starts off the virtual machines the first thing in the morning and sets them down after use in the evening. So what happens in this case is the customer will not be billed for the compute part, which means there are no charges for the virtual machines. However, please note that the customer will get charged for the storage part, right? Because the customer is actually has deployed GBs or terabytes of the VHD files, which are using up the Azure storage service. But the key part is the customer will not be charged for the compute part. We are adding capabilities onto the Azure VMs in terms of VM extensions. So we do offer certain VM extensions in terms of agents for installing anti malware, etc. We also have Chef Puppet support. If it's a scenario as to where a lot of VMs need to be deployed and configured, then you can look at Chef and Puppet support. So if customers already have been using that, they can look at leveraging the same Chef Puppet support on Azure to help them quickly deploy the infrastructure. So this is an example of this creation of a VM from the Image Gallery works. The customer logs into the portal, says, I want to create a new VM from the Image Gallery. The image, which is a VHD, gets copied to the blob storage account, and the virtual machine is booted right from that blob storage. And all the changes are eventually written to that blob storage itself. The other alternative to starting up with the virtual machine was to create your own VHD. You can create a VHD from scratch on Azure, or you can take any VHD that you have already created on-premises, upload it to blob storage in Azure, and then create a virtual machine by attaching it to that disk. Okay. One concept that needs to be understood is the concept of availability sets for virtual machines. One crucial thing that customers need to understand is so if you want to enhance the availability of the applications or the infrastructure deployed on Azure, then it's crucial that you look at deploying multiple servers in each tier. So if it was a traditional three-tiered application, then you should be looking at multiple web servers, you should be looking at multiple app servers, and then you should be looking at multiple DB servers. Now let's take a tier in isolation. Let's say we end up taking the web server tier itself. Now what you can tell Azure out here is that I have two web servers, and these two web servers are configured as a part of a single availability set. Now, the way this helps improve your availability is it tells Azure both are a part of the same tier. Now, so when it comes to creating the virtual machine itself, Azure will ensure that the infrastructure is actually deployed on separate physical infrastructure, right? Also, in terms of updates, Azure will ensure, so whenever there is a patching activity that has to happen for the underlying infrastructure, let's say there are some patches to be done for storage, there are some patches to be done for the host operating system, then Azure will ensure that only one of the machines are from an availability set will be impacted. So the host operating systems will be updated one by one, thereby ensuring that at least one of the virtual machines that you have the availability set is active and up and running. So it's crucial from a deployment perspective, especially if you're looking at production workloads, that you do create availability sets and deploy the virtual machines into the appropriate availability sets. So Affinity Group is a concept to help co-locate or to help keep all the resources required for an application closer together. So Azure gives you complete flexibility in deploying a virtual machine or storage to any one of the Azure data centers. With a single account, you can go ahead and actually create the resources anywhere. However, if you're looking at deploying an application that has to sit together, then it does make sense for you to define an affinity group. Let's say you decide to select US East as one of the data centers. You should go ahead and create the storage account in that data center as well as all the virtual machines in that data center. This helps ensure better performance, lower latency, and obviously eliminate any bandwidth egress costs. So this slide displays a list of all the VM sizes that we have on Azure today. So A0 is an instance that you not consider. That's primarily for small time test stuff. You should be looking at A1 to A9 instances. So each VM size is a combination of a certain amount of CPU and memory. An A1 is one core and RAM 1.75 GB. Similarly, going on to our biggest VM size, which is A9, which is 16 cores and 112 GB. Based on the VM size, you can also attach a number of data disks to it. So for an A1 VM, you can attach a maximum of 2 data disks to it. For an A4, you can attach a maximum of 16 disks to it. Each disk is, as I said, can go to a maximum of 1 terabyte. So you can attach 16 terabytes of storage to a VM. Now, from an IOPS perspective, because this also comes into consideration while designing your application or SAP deployment, so each disk will give you 500 IOPS maximum. So if you look at the higher-end VM, which has 16 disks being mapped to it, you will have a combination of 16 into 500, which is about 8,000 IOPS that you can actually get. From an SAP or national perspective, there are certain VM sizes that will be very relevant to you, which should be A5, A7, A8, which we will discuss in detail in the subsequent few sessions. But this is a list of all the VM sizes available today. We are obviously adding on to this list. In addition, we are also getting certain SSD-based disks, which can actually get you higher IOPS. So let's go to the networking part. So your applications that actually get deployed on Azure can be a part of a virtual private network there. The deployment on Azure can be considered as an extension of your on-premises data center. So the key thing out here is, in case you actually have an IP addressing scheme, which is one of the private IP address ranges, 10.172 or 192, you can carry forward the same IP addressing scheme to Azure. So your servers will practically be in the same network. Now, to do that, you can actually build a site-to-site VPN between the Azure data center and your local on-premises data center. We will be discussing the connectivity options in the next couple of slides. So we do have a site-to-site, point-to-site, and express route, which I'll explain in the next couple of slides. From an application deployment perspective, it's crucial to understand that you decide if you want to expose your application to the internet. So that there are customers who deployed applications, and those the applications deployed on Azure are an extension of their on-premises data center, and all access to the Azure application happens over the site-to-site VPN from on-premises to Azure. They have exposed no public endpoint. So that is a call that the customer can take and say, okay, I don't want to expose this application over the internet, and hence my application did not have any public endpoints. However, if it's an internet-facing application, yes, you can define endpoints, you can define ports, you can define that these endpoints are load balanced, and Microsoft Azure will automatically give you a load balancer, which is free of cost, and can actually help you route traffic between multiple servers in your web tier or your application tier. From a connectivity perspective, these are the couple of connectivity options that we've been offering since the last couple of years. There are two options primarily. One is site-to-site VPN and the other is point-to-site VPN. So site-to-site VPN helps you hook up an entire data center to Microsoft Azure. So what you can do in this case is, if you have a VPN router, you can configure it to connect to Microsoft Azure. The connectivity will happen over your existing public internet connection. For a dev test scenario, you can even explore setting up a server, mapping a public IP to it, setting up the server with Windows Server 2012, routing and remote access services, and you can configure a site-to-site VPN even using that server infrastructure. So once you set up this site-to-site VPN in place, all the machines within your data center can directly access the Azure data center using the private IP address range, your 10.1.network or so on. You can define multiple site-to-site VPN connections from your data centers to Azure, so we do have support for multiple site-to-site VPNs. Additionally, if, let's say, you have a mobile workforce, and they need to connect to your application. But if you have not exposed your application or the public internet, and you want to ensure secure connectivity between your mobile workforce and Azure, you can do that by using point-to-site VPN. So point-to-site VPN, there will be a small piece of software that gets installed on the user's machines that help them directly connect to the Microsoft Azure data centers, and they can actually access the applications again using their private IP addressing range. Now, so since the site-to-site VPN as well as the point-to-site VPN, since this connectivity happens over existing internet connections that the customer may have to Azure, a lot of customers, since they migrated quite a few workloads to Azure, have a need for better bandwidth connectivity between Azure and their on-premise data center. Hence, we introduced Express It Out. So the first scenario is what I just explained. So scenario 2 and scenario 3 are two scenarios that have been enabled by our Express It Out offering. So Express It Out is available in certain geographies and certain data centers. So I suggest you do check the availability of Express It Out in the location that you're planning to deploy the workload. There are two options in case of Express It Out. You can go for an exchange service provider-based option, or you can go for the third scenario, which is the network service provider-based option. So in case of the Express It Out partner location scenario, you can look at hosting certain infrastructure, maybe at the partner location itself. This will give you higher connectivity. So you can get speeds of up to max of 10 Gbps between the Express It Out partner location and Microsoft Azure. So customers have used this to enable certain colo scenarios, co-location scenarios, as to where some of the servers can get deployed with the Express It Out partner location. They enjoy a connectivity of 10 Gbps to Azure, thereby enabling scenarios as to where the databases can be on that the Express It Out partner location, but the app tier can be on Azure. So these are some of the scenarios that have been enabled by Express It Out. The third scenario it's as part of Express It Out itself is the network service provider option. You can get, so this is similar to customers getting an MPLS connectivity between, let's say, their offices, right? So here in this case, the network service provider can actually offer you MPLS connectivity between your customer sites or between the customer's sites and the Azure data center. Network speeds in this case can go up to a max of 1 Gbps. Now, the key thing to note out here is since these connections are not going over the public internet, you will get sustained bandwidth in the Express Out scenarios. And for customers who do have a lot of network traffic going back and forth between the Azure data center and on-premises, we would definitely recommend an Express Out implementation. Let's understand a few security and compliance-related features of Azure. These are questions that very often come up in most customer RFPs. How is it that you're handling encryption in transit? So the communication between Azure data centers is encrypted. Access to the Azure administration portal itself is over HTTPS. Customers can decide to use HTTPS or REST API or HTTPS protocol itself for doing any automation or management. From an encryption at REST perspective, if you have virtual machines deployed on Azure, you can look at using the same enterprise-grade BitLocker security that you're using in on-premises on Azure. For SQL Server deployed on Azure, you can look at doing a transparent data encryption, depending on as to whether the application supports it. So storage, we discussed the BitLocker encryption of drives. Similarly, for .NET application that you may have deployed on Azure, you can use the traditional crypto API similar to the way you would actually use it on-premises. Since Azure is a multi-tenant platform, customers again have a concern sometimes in terms of segregation of data. So just to understand, there is no dedicated hardware given to a customer. It's not as if one whole server is given to a customer. It's a full-blown multi-tenant platform. So in that case, how do we ensure storage isolation? So it's basically a private key mechanism that ensures it's claims-based. So we do have data, we do have hashing algorithms in place to ensure that hypervisors do not leak any information out to another customer's virtual machines. We also have a switch enabled at the network level itself, which ensures that there is no inter-tenant communication. So another customer's VMs can never connect to another customer's VMs. These are some features from a security perspective. There are inbuilt denial of service attack feature prevention measures available on the Azure platform. We regularly do pen testing. Customers can also do penetration testing of the environment provided they inform Microsoft Azure in advance so that we do not think it's a rogue attack. If an application is exposed onto the internet, we allow the concept of endpoint ACLs, where you can actually control access to an endpoint based on the IP address of the client. In addition to this, if customers have, let's say, stringent criteria, security criteria, then an alternative out here could also be the usage of third-party security appliances. So there are virtual appliances which are supported on Azure, like Barracuda. Barracuda provides a web application firewall as well as a next-generation firewall, which can be used to secure various tiers of your application. From a data location and redundancy perspective, we've discussed the three copies in one data center and the geo replication in a data center, in a remote data center. We also do not transfer customer data outside of a geo, which is the reason the pairing happens between data centers within a geography. So the US East to US West, Europe it's Ireland to Netherlands. And customers have full control on where the data resides. From a data deletion perspective, in case a customer closes the account and has downloaded all the data, we do ensure that the disks are formatted. Any defective disks are destroyed at the data center itself. So this ensures that we have NIST 888 compliant procedures, which actually ensure that all the bytes are zeroed out and wiped out before destroying the disk itself. From a certifications perspective, we aggressively pursue any certification that is actually essential to the customer. So this is a list of all the certifications that we already have in place as of now. So as from an SOC 1-2, if you're looking at government deployments, then we have FedRAMP. If you're looking at actually building integration with payment gateways, then we have PCI DSS compliant architecture certification. In case you're looking at healthcare, we have HIPAA BAA agreements in place. And we are aggressively adding on to the list of certifications that we already have in place right now. So let me go to the last bit out here, which is the pricing part. So we looked at the various components so far, right? So we looked at compute, we looked at storage, we looked at bandwidth. So all of these components need to be considered while you're actually creating a bill of material for the customer. So first component out here is compute. So compute, you have a couple of options available there. So we do offer a Windows machine. We offer a Linux virtual machine. Both of them are charged differently. The Windows comes with a license of Windows itself. Now, from an application software perspective, we also provide license included images for certain software like SQL Server, BizTalk Server, Oracle. So in these cases, do not have to procure a license separately for SQL BizTalk, and the cost is baked into the per minute or the per hour cost of the virtual machine itself. So you can decide if the customer does not have an existing license, then you can go for the license included images. But if the customer already has an enterprise agreement with Microsoft in place and has the corresponding license on-premise, then you can look at the license mobility option, whereby the same license can actually be used on Microsoft Azure. So depending on which VM size you're going for, depending on the kind of operating system that you're selecting, you need to select on the pricing sheet or on the website URL The size of the virtual machine and the corresponding Windows or Linux virtual machine or the SQL Vista license integrated versions. You need to select how many virtual machines are you going to be using for your solution. For the storage pricing part, it's a question of deciding, okay, if I have 20 VMs, each one of them requires maybe 1 terabyte of storage, then you require 20 terabytes of storage, plus you may want to factor in additional storage for backups, etc. Right? So you may want to factor in X percent of your existing storage for backups, because all your backup information can also be stored on Azure directly itself. So that will be the storage part that you need to add. Storage transactions is basically number of transactions that happen to the underlying storage. You need to put in a few million here. This does not really impact the overall sizing, but it does have a small minuscule cost to it. The Azure import-export component comes into play only if you leverage the service for transferring information, your VHD files, your data files from on-premises to Azure. So in case you're not doing that, you can ignore this component. From a bandwidth perspective, the two components, ingress and egress, any data into an Azure data center is not charged. It's only outbound data that is charged. So do factor that. So try and get a sense of what is it that is the normal outbound flow, and factor that into the bill of materials itself. Now, in addition to this, if the customer is using any of the connectivity features, let's say a site-to-site VPN, then you have a charge for that too. This is trivial. It's about $40 a month. But in case you go for the higher bandwidth express route options, there is a cost to it, which is there on the website. So now, while creating the pricing, there are a couple of options. You can actually look at the internet website and use the latest prices from the website itself. Or else, if you get in touch with the Pete team, we do have a calculator that we can pass on. This calculator has different, so you will have different prices based on the agreements that the customers may have. So if the customer has an EA agreement, then based on the level of discounting, the prices would be different. So I've just pasted a couple of snapshots of the Excel calculator itself. So this is a single Excel sheet across all of the Azure services. So since in the SAP on Azure scenario, we'll be focusing on compute, storage, network. You can actually put in straight away how many Windows virtual machines, what are the VM sizes, how much storage am I attaching out here, am I using ExpressRoute or not, and it will give you a pricing sheet which has the information across all of the various Azure components. You have support for multiple currencies as well as multiple regions. So you can, since prices change, let's say, to some extent across regions, so you can also decide, you can select a specific region and then get the pricing summary applicable for that region. Please note that in case you are using this calculator, do check back and ensure that you are seeing using the latest Excel sheet. Pricing on the cloud is extremely competitive, and you hear upon price drops from all cloud providers on a monthly basis. So please do ensure that you do have the latest version of the Excel sheet before you compute the form. Right. So this is a summary of what we've discussed today. We've had an introduction to Microsoft Azure. We focused on some of the key components, which are storage, virtual machines, networking. We also looked at some security and compliance-related requirements that go along with Azure deployments, and we also looked at as to how to compute the pricing part. In the subsequent few sessions, we will be focusing in detail specifically on SAP deployment scenarios and NetWeaver, etc. So I welcome you guys to give feedback on these sessions and giving us feedback in terms of what you would like to see or what we'd like to improve on in the subsequent sessions. Please use this URL to give feedback. We will be pasting this URL in the chat window too. With that, we're done with the session for the day, and I'd like to throw it open for questions. Please use the Q&A a button on top to start posting questions.
Thank you, Norman. Gentlemen, if you have any questions on the Azure Fundamentals session, please post them now. We'll also be sharing the feedback link through an email, so please request you to make sure that you give us the feedback so that the future sessions can be modified accordingly.
Okay, Karthik has a question. Will there be a handout provided for each one of the sessions? So we would be making the presentation, the recordings available.
We will also be posting the recording on Channel 9 for you to use at a later point of time. Once all the sessions are complete, we'll post the recordings as well. So we'll wait for a few more minutes for any other questions. No?
Yeah.
Thank you, David. Glad that you liked this session.
So there's a question from Amit in terms of what type of business is Azure suitable for. It's for any kind of business. So it's not just for small and medium business or large business. Any kind of business can actually use it. So we do have, let's say, large enterprises who are on Azure, as well as small-time SME customers who just want to build or have a simple website on Azure. The best part is you pay for what you use, and we do have a variety of offerings from free websites right to your enterprise-grade virtual machines that you can use for your applications.
Just to add, I think the very fact that we are discussing about SAP on Azure points to the fact that very, very large businesses can actually run on Azure. Okay, if there are no other questions, thank you so much for joining us today. And Norman, thank you so much for taking the time to go through the Azure Fundamental sessions for us. We will have further sessions this week as well as next week. So please join us then. Thank you and have a good day.
Yeah, thanks to everyone for attending the sessions. Thank you very much.